Hello, and welcome to the Over 50 Health and Wellness Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin English. I'm a certified personal trainer and nutrition coach, and my mission is to help you get into the best shape of your life, regardless of your age, so that you can show up in life as the healthiest, strongest, most vital version of yourself. I want to let you know that if you enjoy this podcast, I have additional free resources over at silveredgefree.com. There you'll find my mini guides on nutrition, exercise, and lifestyle. Now, today we have another edition of the Coach's Corner, so no guest today, it's just me, and we'll be back next week with our regular interview format. Here's what we're covering in this episode. I'll start out with a bit of a rant on COVID-19 vaccinations and the state of our collective health. And then, as long as I'm covering triggering topics, I thought I'd share my experience as a vegan and my lessons learned during that part of my life. After that, I'll give an update on how things are going with my client, Brock. If you're not familiar, Brock is a podcaster himself. He's the host of the Midlife Mastery podcast, and he's hired me as a personal trainer and nutrition coach, and he suggested that we share our journey on our respective podcasts, me from the coach's perspective and Brock from the client's perspective. He's on a journey to get into the best shape of his life in his 50s, and he'd like to lose 40 pounds and regain some of the strength that he had when he was younger. I cover most of this in the earlier edition of the Coach's Corners, so today we're going to pick up where we left off last time. After that, I'll do a quick book review, and then we'll wrap up with a brief discussion on my main takeaways from some of my recent podcast guests. Okay, let's get on with today's show. I know this is a touchy subject, but let's talk about COVID vaccinations and the state of our collective health today. Here in the United States, we are definitely a country divided. As of the date of this recording, only a little over 50% of Americans are fully vaccinated. And strangely enough, this is strongly correlated along political lines. If you're liberal-leaning, chances are you're fully vaccinated, and if you're more conservatively-minded, chances are you're not vaccinated. And the division between these two camps seems to be deepening. This week's issue of Newsweek has a very scary-looking graphic with the words, "The Doomsday Variant," on the front cover, and the online headline reads, "A Doomsday COVID Variant Worse Than Delta and Lambda May Be Coming, Scientists Say." With so much extremist rhetoric and emotion coming from both camps, the population seems becoming more and more entrenched in their respective beliefs. But regardless of where you fall on the vaccination spectrum, one thing seems to be lost in all of these vaccine wars, and that's the simple fact that strong, healthy people are harder to kill. In other words, people who are metabolically healthy have much less to fear from getting sick or injured, for that matter. A healthy population has much less to fear from diseases like COVID-19. The CDC reported that over 90% of all COVID deaths had comorbidities associated with them, and most of those are lifestyle diseases, things like type 2 diabetes, hypertension, obesity, heart disease, dyslipidemia, which is poor cholesterol health, and many types of cancer. So, regardless of where you fall on the spectrum of vaccinations, this is a perfect time for us to rally around healthy lifestyle changes. According to the CDC, 6 out of 10 of adults in the United States have a chronic disease, and 4 out of 10 have 2 or more chronic diseases. And they go on to state that chronic disease is a leading cause of death with a healthcare cost of over $3.8 trillion, with a T, trillion dollars, here in the U.S. alone. Now, without diminishing the severity of the COVID-19 pandemic, preventable chronic illnesses kill way more humans than COVID. And it has for a long time now, and it's only getting worse. Which brings me to why I wanted to talk about this. I can't figure out for the life of me why we as a human race aren't using this pandemic as a platform to discuss healthy lifestyle changes. I mean, where is the media coverage on this? Where are the health officials breaking down, crying on national TV, or speaking out with outrage, beseeching the public to give up eating crappy processed foods and sugary drinks? why aren't they educating the public on the benefits of regular, vigorous exercise? Instead, we have ridiculous programs where, and I kid you not, you can get a free McDonald's meal or free donuts for getting vaccinated. Seriously? We're bribing sick people with metabolic poison to get vaccinated in the name of health. And now we're starting to see legislation stating where non-vaccinated people can and can't go. Picture this. Imagine a proposal that said you couldn't enter a public building without providing proof that you exercised vigorously for a minimum of 3 hours the preceding week, or that you didn't eat any ultra-processed foods or exceed your sugar allowance for a week. That's ridiculous. It's your body and your health is your responsibility. But the fact remains that chronic illnesses kill way more people than COVID, has for a long time, and it's getting worse, not better. And the vast majority of these chronic diseases are lifestyle diseases, meaning that they are within our power to control. We can consider these chronic diseases, again, things like diabetes and high blood pressure, poor cholesterol health, certain cancers, arthritis, and obesity, more as symptoms of poor metabolic health at the cellular level, and these symptoms are caused in large part by our dietary choices and our activity level. While we obviously can't and shouldn't legislate eating healthy and exercise, we can do a better job of education and support. In our lifetime, we saw smoking greatly decline as a result of targeted public service campaigns. Now seems the perfect time to attack these poor lifestyle choices that are literally killing us. And look, I get it. It's a very poor comparison, comparing chronic illness to something like COVID, since these lifestyle diseases aren't contagious. You're not going to catch somebody else's diabetes or hypertension just by coming in contact with them. But the fact remains that these diseases are killing way more of us than COVID currently is. And before we go any further, let me clarify, I'm not anti-vax. I certainly do have concerns about emergency use vaccines without any long-term studies, and I have my concerns around vaccinating entire populations of people, whether they are at risk or not. But it just seems to me that we're missing a golden opportunity for public outreach and education for reducing lifestyle diseases. If we poured one half as much hype and attention to making our citizens healthy as we are in trying to convince them to get vaccinated, we'd be in a much better position to fight off COVID. Unfortunately, there are three major roadblocks to making this happen, and those are behavior change, politics, and money. Let's discuss behavior change first. Getting people to change their behavior, their ingrained habits, is extremely difficult to do. And this is especially true when it comes to making healthy lifestyle changes. We're asking people to make difficult choices every day for the rest of their lives. And I get it. Ultra-processed foods and drinks, chock full of sugar, fats, and salt, they taste delicious. A Pop-Tart tastes better than a leaf of kale. Soda is tastier than plain old water. And exercising every day may not be as much fun as binge-watching Netflix. Going to bed at the same time every night and ensuring you get your 8 hours of quality sleep may not be as much fun as going out and partying. But consistently making these choices are what make us healthy, resilient humans. But instead, we advertise happy meals and sugary cereals and drinks to our children. We place convenience and instant gratification above our health and well-being. We allow quote-unquote food companies and pharmaceutical companies to lobby our governments. When we walk into a supermarket, the vast majority of products in there aren't even real food. We've normalized unhealthy living. We actually encourage metabolic disease, and it's against this mighty headwind that we're trying to convince people to make behavior changes that would have massive benefits to both the individual concerned and to our society at large. The second major roadblock to getting people healthy is political. There simply is no political currency in championing a healthy citizenry. Giving lip service to this is fine, but actually trying to affect any real change here is almost certainly political suicide. Try to tell people we're going to tax their sugary drinks and fast food and see what kind of reaction you get. And don't get me wrong, with my libertarian leaning, I'm not advocating for more government taxation. But with police enforcement of mask mandates in some areas and the increasing restrictions on what unvaccinated people can do and where they can go, we're moving into uncharted territory. And in my experience, politicians are more concerned with re-elections than they are with the health and wellness of their citizens. The third major roadblock to a healthy population is money. There are literally trillions of dollars being made from sick and unhealthy people. Now, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I don't believe there's an evil cabal of rich men in a room somewhere wringing their hands in glee over all the sick people and the financial windfall that that brings. But the ugly reality is that a chronically ill population is worth a lot of money to a lot of corporations. Pfizer recently stated that a third booster shot will help mitigate the effects of COVID. And while that certainly may be true, it's indicative of just how wacky this situation has become. I mean, you want to talk about the fox guarding the hen house. So while there are millions, billions, and trillions of dollars being made and traded during this pandemic, there are literally thousands being made by gyms, personal trainers, and nutrition coaches. Thousands. I myself am a self-made thousandaire. I too am reaching out to the unhealthy population, trying to sell them on the benefits of making permanent healthy lifestyle changes. But sadly, many people aren't the least bit interested in this form of medicine, even though it's literally life-saving. Sadly, many people want the quick fix of an injection or a pill to save them. And while there certainly is a time and a place for these medicines, for the most part, they are treating symptoms and do nothing to help the root cause of our metabolic health. So, are vaccines the answer? Will they save us from COVID? I honestly don't know. Perhaps they will. But wherever you fall on the spectrum, my plea is that you take care of your health, that you become the healthiest version of yourself, and that you encourage others in your sphere of influence to do the same. You'll handle our current pandemic better, as well as future variants. Maybe even the doomsday variant. But I'll leave you with this final thought on the subject. You and only you are responsible for your health and well-being. Whatever decision you make for yourself regarding vaccination, I personally honor and respect that decision. I'd love to hear your thoughts, and we can continue this conversation over at silveredgefitness.com/episode71. I'd ask that you keep the conversation civil, but if you feel strongly and decide to unload, that's okay too. Okay, that's enough of that. So if you're not triggered already, let's talk about veganism. About 10 years ago, I made the decision to go vegan. And this came as a surprise, more of a shock really, to my wife and kids and really to myself. At the time, I didn't give a whole lot of thought to what I ate. But I certainly didn't eat many vegetables, and I suppose my diet was more or less the standard American diet, which is to say that I ate a ton of refined and highly processed carbs, fast food, and deli meats. I was doing triathlons and the occasional marathon back then, so I was burning through all those calories that I was eating, but I was certainly a long way nutritionally from where I am now. I was also fascinated with ultra running. I hadn't actually done an ultra. And an ultra is technically any distance over 26.2 miles. That's the marathon distance. But they typically start at 50K, which is about 31 miles. Then they go to 50 milers and then 100K distance and then 100 milers. And nowadays there are even 200 and 300 mile races. Anyway, I read a book by Rich Roll called Finding Ultra. And if you're not familiar with Rich, he struggled with substance abuse issues and overcame them in part through endurance training and racing. He was, and still is, a big proponent of plant-based nutrition. And a lot of his personal story resonated with me, and about that time I was introduced to podcasts. And I can't really remember now, but I think Rich's podcast was the very first podcast I ever listened to. And his podcast is still going strong today, and I'm still a fan. So I was exposed to Rich and his thoughts on plant-based athletics, and about this same time, I saw the movie Forks Over Knives. In this documentary, Dr. T. Colin Campbell, he's a nutritional biochemist from Cornell University, and Dr. Caldwell Esselstein, he's a former top surgeon with the Cleveland Clinic, make a very compelling case that most chronic diseases could be controlled, if not reversed, by eliminating animal-based foods. And as simple as that, I became convinced that the optimal human diet was a vegan diet. So I bought a few vegan cookbooks and scoured the internet for plant-based research. But through the lens of somebody looking for validation of what I was already convinced of, namely that the vegan diet was the optimal diet for human health, and I found, not surprisingly, a ton of information. Not only about the health benefits, but about the evils of factory farming, which is something that I hadn't really considered before. I grew up on a beef cattle farm, and each year we got a bunch of chickens that were my responsibility, and when I was old enough, it was my job to butcher them. So I had an unsentimental upbringing in that sense. On our farm, our animals lived a nearly idyllic life, and then they met a quick end, and they nourished us. It seemed very natural to me. And then later in life, I suppose, I had a naive romantic notion that that's how all of my meat, eggs, and dairy were raised. But now, deep in the internet, learning of the horrors of factory farming, which really is nasty business, and I'm even more convinced that the vegan diet is best. Oh, and apparently cow farts are contributing to greenhouse gases. So by me cutting out beef and dairy, I can now help save the earth. Okay, so now I was in deep. I was convinced that the vegan diet was the healthiest way to eat, and I was convinced that it was cruel and unusual to eat animals. But here's the thing. I felt fantastic in those first few months of going 100% plant-based. I mean, like, superhuman. I had more energy. My libido improved. My recovery from long runs and rides seemed much better. And this was a key turning point in my life. It's the first time I really connected what I ate to how I felt and how I performed. And at this point, I was 100% bought in. I was convinced that the plant-based diet was the healthiest way to eat. And I was not supporting animal cruelty. And as an added bonus, I was doing my part to save the earth from the disaster of cow farts. But fast forward 6 months later, and all of those early health benefits were wearing off. I no longer had all that newfound energy. In fact, I found myself getting very sleepy, like pathologically tired, every mid-afternoon. What the heck? Okay, so back to the internet for some more research, and I'm Googling my vegan symptoms, and there's no shortage of helpful advice. Primarily the fact that I need to be supplementing. Okay, so I needed to supplement B12. Oh, and it turns out there are two forms of iron, heme and non-heme, and heme is only found in animal-based foods. Oh, I also need to supplement omega-3s, but only from seeds, which are actually a very poor source of omega-3s. I needed calcium, zinc, selenium, vitamin D, vitamin K12, and on and on. And some of these supplements required additional supplements in order for them to be properly absorbed. And of course, I needed to get my protein in, so I always had a big canister of plant-based protein powder, mainly rice, pea, and hemp-based. Looking back on it, there were a couple of flaws in my thinking and behavior. The first is that when I started my plant-based journey, I ate 100% whole foods. I spent hours shopping, prepping, and cooking. But slowly over time, that got tedious, and I started opting for processed foods. Lots of fake meat, vegan ice cream, vegan power bars, basically ultra-processed food that was not serving my health one bit. So now I was eating a crappy processed food diet, and I had an entire cupboard filled with supplements. But here's the thing. Humans evolved over hundreds of thousands of years, and in 99% of cases, they ate a varied omnivorous diet. And long story short, my plant-based diet was no longer serving my body, and I just couldn't supplement my way out of it. Now, this is my personal story. There are plenty of examples of amazing plant-based athletes that perform at very high levels for very long periods of time. But for me, my plant-based experiment had run its course. And here's the funny thing. It was actually hard to switch back. I had somehow wrapped up my identity as being a vegan. Somewhere along the line, I decided that I was a vegan, as opposed to a person who chose to eat a plant-based diet. And this greatly complicated my transitioning back into omnivory. But one day, without any fanfare, I unceremoniously ate some chicken. And that broke the spell. So, what were some lessons learned? Although I didn't realize it at the time, this was my first exposure to the dramatic health effects of whole foods compared to processed and ultra-processed foods. In fact, I may have lasted a lot longer as a vegan had I stuck with a whole food vegan diet. Who knows, maybe I'd still be vegan today. The second lesson I learned was that I am not my diet. Rather, I choose my diet. What we eat is often highly personal, and nowadays has even become politicized. It's even like a religion to some. And my third takeaway from my time eating vegan is to be more aware of the foods I choose and the impact on both the animal and the environment. I now consider myself a conscious omnivore, and I try to source my meat, eggs, and dairy as ethically as possible. I look for humanely raised, 100% grass-fed and finished options, and I try to support small local farms where possible. My final word on veganism is this. In a time of so much division and tension, let's not demonize one another over what we choose to eat. If you have strong beliefs concerning diet, try to find ways to share those beliefs lovingly and reasonably, but practice compassion and understanding with folks that have differing beliefs or are on a different path from you. Okay, so if you've listened to any of the other Coach's Corner episodes, you know that one of my clients is a fellow podcaster. His name is Brock Edwards, and he's the creator and host of the Midlife Mastery podcast. And he's on a mission to get into the best shape of his life. He suggested that we each do periodic updates on our journey together on our respective podcasts. Me from the coach's perspective, and him, of course, from the client's perspective. If you'd like to listen to his updates, you can check him out at www.midlifemasterypodcast.com. During our last update, Brock had a week from hell. His daughter got ill and required emergency surgery. And just to let you know, she's doing fine now. His mom, who he hadn't seen since before COVID began, was in town for a visit, and he tweaked his back. He was understandably stressed out, and his diet, which had been so good up until then, fell apart. And this is a very fragile point in anybody's fitness journey. Brock was only a couple of months in, and he had just experienced a setback. And it would have been easy for him to slip back into his old habits, but instead he posted on his social media that setbacks aren't a warning to play smaller, they're a message to play bigger. So Brock is back at it full force with the realization that progress simply is never linear. There's going to be bumps in the road along the way. So far, he's lost about 12 pounds in 10 weeks, and he's back to his barbell training and even rediscovering his love for running again. He's recommitted to his nutrition. So far, we're really just focusing on hitting protein goals and his total calorie intake for the day. And I have him thinking about ways he can start swapping out some of his processed food choices for whole foods. Brock is just finishing up his initial 12-week intro phase of exercise, where the emphasis has been on light weights and good form and accumulating some volume. The idea in this phase is less muscle building and more neurological adaptations. That is, really getting his body used to these basic barbell movements again. So next week, we'll start a new 12-week strength training phase where the emphasis will be on progressive overload and increasing Brock's strength. We'll still be doing full body days, and we'll focus on basic compound movements like barbell squats, deadlifts, as well as some pushing and pulling movements. And the idea is we'll continue this progression until he gets to a point where he plateaus. Once he can no longer keep adding, say, 5 pounds to the barbell for each lift, we'll switch up the programming to keep him progressing. But for now, I'm getting ready to move him into his initial strength phase to help him reach both his weight loss goals as well as some performance goals that he set for himself. I'm so excited for Brock. He has a great attitude, and I think he's going to see some great results in this next training cycle. This week, I want to review an absolute classic book in the strength training world, and that is Starting Strength, Basic Barbell Training by Mark Ripiteau. I thought since I just had Andy Baker on the last episode, and if you haven't listened to that episode, you most certainly should, that this would be an ideal book to review this week since we referenced it several times in that show. So here's the deal. Hands down, the best way to learn the compound barbell lifts, namely the squat, the deadlift, bench press, overhead press, and power cleans, is to find a qualified in-person coach to teach you these movements. But the second best way is to get a copy of this book and study it. Treat it like a textbook. Read it, reread it, and then go back over the material again with a highlighter. Now, Mark Ripiteau, affectionately known as Rip, is a bit of a polarizing personality in the strength world. He has a very strong personality with very strong opinions, and he's not afraid to share them with anyone, and typically without any filter or regard for anyone's feelings, and he's unapologetically that way. So he's not everyone's cup of tea, so to speak, but that does not detract from the importance of this work. I'm on my second copy of this book, and my current copy is dirty, it's dog-eared, bookmarked, and highlighted, and I still break it out from time to time as a refresher resource. If you're new to the major compound lifts, or if you haven't done them in a while, I strongly recommend buying this book. I'll drop a link into the show notes, which you can find at silveredgefitness.com/episode71. 3 weeks ago, I interviewed Gene Dykes, aka the Ultra Geezer. Gene is a 73-year-old world record endurance runner. Gene took up ultra running, which again is basically anything longer than the 26.2-mile marathon, late in life, and he holds multiple world records at multiple distances. Gene's mission is to try and run a little further or a little faster every week, every month, and every year. Most recently, Gene decided to take on the Bigfoot 200-mile race through the Cascade Mountains in Washington State. He had completed it a few years ago, and wanted to test himself again to see if he still had that distance in him. When I spoke to him, that race was still a couple weeks out, and as of the time of this recording, that race is officially over. It ended on Tuesday, October 17th, 2021, and while I was watching the live race tracker on that Bigfoot 200 website, it looks like Gene was unable to finish. It looks like he covered a total distance of 125 plus miles in 2 days, 10 hours, and 37 minutes. I haven't spoken to him yet, so I don't know if he missed a cutoff or if an injury forced him to stop or what happened. I'll see if I can get him back on the podcast to tell his story. But my main takeaway from talking with Gene was this. We are all capable of so much more than we believe we are. And that age only limits what's possible in so much as we allow our minds to believe limiting thoughts. Gene has had an incredible running career, and he didn't get started until late in life. In fact, his greatest achievements came at age 70. 2 weeks ago, I interviewed Julia Olson. Julia has had to overcome quite a bit in her life. As a child, she lost her sister to cancer. And then at age 11, was diagnosed as a type 1 diabetic, which eventually led to her giving herself 4 to 6 injections daily. When she hit her 30s, she was told that her kidneys were failing, and she opted for a still experimental double organ transplant. Then in her 40s, she had triple cardiac bypass surgery, and in her 50s, she had a thyroidectomy. Then in her 60s, she came up on her 30-year organ transplant anniversary and decided she wanted to honor the gift of life that she'd been given. And so she started her fitness journey, which resulted in a first place finish in a Masters Bikini Bodybuilding show at the age of 64. Today, Julia inspires her following on social media with not only her incredible body transformation, but with her message of self-love and acceptance of where you are right now, with honoring the present to truly manifest your purpose and share that with the world. This was a very inspiring show. The first 20 minutes were actually kind of depressing as we chronicled Julia's constant health battles, but then hearing how she's risen above that and how she's living her life to the fullest now is truly a heartwarming story. My most recent episode was with Andy Baker. Andy has over 17 years' experience as a personal trainer and strength coach, and he's one of the most sought-after strength and fitness experts in the industry. Andy coaches high-level elite athletes as well as athletes of aging, as we'll call ourselves here, and he is the co-author of Practical Programming for Strength Training, along with Mark Ripito, as well as the co-author of The Barbell Prescription, Strength Training for Life After 40, with Dr. Jonathan Sullivan. In this episode, Andy breaks down exactly what we need to do in terms of getting stronger, as well as how to do it, and how to implement these exercises into an effective program. And he shares programming tips for everyone from the total novice to the person who's interested in competing in their first powerlifting meet. My main takeaway from this conversation with Andy is that an exercise program for older adults doesn't need to be overly complicated. In fact, it shouldn't be. Andy is an absolute expert in exercise programming, and he doesn't hold anything back in this episode. He shares a ton of useful knowledge. Okay, that's our show for today, folks. I'll put links to everything we talked about in the show notes, and you can find that over at silveredgefitness.com/episode71. And don't forget to check out silveredgefree.com for more great free resources on how to live your healthiest, strongest life after 50. I'll be back next week with an interview with Dr. Gabrielle Lyon, and she's going to talk to us about muscle-centric medicine and why that matters for aging adults. You don't want to miss this episode. Thanks so much for spending your time with me today, and until next time, stay strong.